And I'll ask my colleagues just to leap in where, I mean, even on the questions that I do answer, if they've got more to add. So, Honourable Peters, you asked about the speech. You are correct. The speech that the minister that is published must always be checked against delivery, because often things may be added or deleted between the time that it comes back from the publishers and the time the minister goes. But we do have a speech document that is also printed. Although the chair and I were just discussing, we hope that when we no longer publish the thick book in a physical copy, that members will have this on their iPads and use it in that way, other than to carry the big book around with you all the time.
But those old
pages.
And teachers will remember skim books. You know, skim books, teachers used to have skim books and so on every day. They must then. So, yeah, we must try and gravitate towards the 4IR.
Okay, then just to answer the question from Honourable Member Josephs around the school infrastructure. So the transfer is 20 billion, and of the 20 billion, there are three big transfers that get made. The biggest one is 10 billion or so for the education infrastructure grant. The next biggest amount is about 7 billion or so for the school nutrition grant, so that's 17. And the other transfer is the transfer to NSFAS for teacher bursaries of about 1.2 billion. So that's the 20 billion. For the school infrastructure, there is also a capital portion on the national vote of roughly about 1.8 billion for the school's backlog grant. So all of that is in the bill. I just only showed the first three main divisions, but there's actually five. So these infrastructure ones are in the fourth main division. Then on the conditional grants, Honourable Peters, we try, I think in all the boats that have conditional grants, they have to have an admin portion to undertake their support and their oversight. And that would be listed in the you'll see that in the detail in each vote. Because the accounting officer of the grant is at national, they have to account for the use of that money. So therefore they would need to set up those structures. So depending on the type of grant it is, will determine the amount set aside for support and monitoring. Or also sometimes whether it's a new grant, then sometimes there's a bigger portion for that. And then once the grant is flowing smoothly, that could come down. But there is always a portion on the national vote to do that support. And I'm assuming, and Wendy maybe and Stephen would know better, in the province there would be a corresponding person who will take responsibility, let's say, for the school nutrition program, and they would have their own setup. So, Chair, the difficult questions I will really try. This committee is got its own law. It is your law. So you could set up your own procedure for how you want to undertake your interaction with the two bills. So the one thing you have done is to invite the public, and then I think you need to work out how you would interact with the other committees. So I don't know, Chair. I mean, I'm just talking as you asked that question. I don't know if you ever have a meeting with the chairs of the other committees, like as a joint grouping. Say you between, not necessarily all of them, but let's say we come to you in the third quarter and you realize there's 6 votes that are not spending properly. They're either spending lagging or they're getting spending ahead. Do you have the power to say to the chairs of those 6, can we have a quick discussion about what is going on here?
Okay, let me help. Cooperative governance says we should do that, right? And we have had joint committee meetings, for instance, with the Standing Committee on Finance, Public Enterprises. As you know, it has been a big one. So it hasn't created problems. You request that can we have a joint meeting on that one, and you bring both committees together. In fact, in some instances, you have seen where the finance-related committees, both at NCOP and at National Assembly, would come together. So I think we've done it, although the constraints, I'm sure, it's more time, and our time frames as far as executing some of the legislative requirements from our side.
Then from the point of view of the executive...
Just a second, Honourable Chairman.
Sorry to interrupt, Chairperson, but I think the point raised was particularly with reference to the quarterly expenditure. I'm not sure if it's the Chair of Chairs Committee here in Parliament, what their role is, but the point raised about, say, for example, under expenditure between committees, do we have the mandate to call in that other chairs who have oversight over that department to work together to address the issue of whatever financial it is?
Yes, we do.
Then from an executive point of view...
Perhaps
because one to just deal with this question and, you know, be discussed. One would ask a simple question from the team treasurer. When is the actual start of the budget cycle? Month? The actual month where the budget cycle starts? Because, Chair, we had this workshop last week. And they clearly indicated to us that immediately after the budget day, the 2020 budget cycle would start. But it's only now, when we have stringent, you know, time constraints, that we are now, you know, engaged with this almost fine documentation. If perhaps all this that we are talking about, capturing also what you raised, that we would have our own prolonged, programs. Why not engage us from the onset? Say, if the budget cycle starts in March, by March, we start together and we walk along together.
Okay.
The way we interact as part of the executive with the other portfolio committees is we get the BRRRs, budgetary recommendation reports, and we are asked either as the Treasury specifically or the department specifically, or the department and the Treasury to respond to recommendations from those committees, which we do, and that forms part of the budget review annex, in which if you see them tomorrow, because last year we would also have done this, often committees will say X program needs to have more funding allocated. See, we have never got a single one where it said X program needs to have their funding reduced. So the deadlock breaking mechanism for that, unfortunately, is this committee. Because if you take all those reports and you will interact with the appropriation bill that gets presented tomorrow, let's just say there were 41 of them, one for each vote, and they would all say, this one needs more money, this one needs more money, then it will be up to you to decide which one should get the more money, because that's the one that you will propose as the amendment. So that's the difficulty, is that there isn't I think it's human nature. It's not anything terrible, but that's the nature. But similarly, as this committee is the one in which we come and explain how the spending goes in the year, you can see that sometimes not having the money is not the problem. That there are other issues. And so sometimes even in our responses to the BRRRs, we will point that out, that where there are some issues.
Just answer this one. When does your budgetary process start?
Yes, so we start in earnest, the guidelines go out in June, and we start in earnest in July in interacting, because now we would still be finalizing February and March's expenditure of the previous financial year, and then we would be adding our application in, no, I'm just telling it like it is, in April, because we don't really go on vacation in December. But I'm not sure, honourable members, how we start our process with you. That's a bit more complicated because we are part of the executive. And I mean, maybe the other colleagues have ideas.
Honourable Sheikh?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to be assisted. Tomorrow the minister is going to present his budget. Now, do you not believe that before that process is even considered in terms of what he's going to propose tomorrow, this committee, which is mandated to do oversight and things on all these departments and things, should be part and parcel of that entire thing, because we ought to know who's performing, who's not performing, who's doing what. Don't you think I don't know, I'm just getting guidance from you. Don't you think we need to play a more pivotal role in this entire budget process, since we are supposed to be the eyes and ears of the people, checking on whether the departments are performing? Should it not come to deal with us, and we should have some say in the recommendations or the budget that he's going to propose tomorrow? Just some guidance on that.
Honourable Aris.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to find out, we have a situation where Equitable Shares was invested into one of the municipalities that invested Equitable Shares. I think it was about 100 million of the 300 million that the municipality did invest. What is the role of this committee in terms of that, except for that the portfolio counselors involved in this investment are still there. So what will this committee's role be to ensure that grants or Equitable Shares that have been given to the municipalities, the money are really spent for services rendered to our people?
Hello, Peter.
Chairperson, like I said earlier, when one will come back to the issues of the appropriations, I was actually worried earlier on when the presentation was made with regard to slide 37, which shows the amendments to the appropriations bill as towards the money bills and related matters act. Those conditions, I would want to say, for any amendment to take place, literally paralyzes the committee in terms of doing anything, especially if you look at the last part, the last but second bullet, where it says that for any amendment, you need to indicate those reasons, but look at this one. Set out the manner in which the amendment relates to prevailing departmental strategic plans, reports of the Auditor General, committee reports that have been adopted by the House, which is also your triple PRR and the very committee that is affected by this amendment, how it will then affect them. If it is education, the reports from education. Reports in terms of Section 32 of the PFMA, which is so necessary, this thing. Remember, we get quarterly reports. So we have been tracking spending as a committee. It means whatever amendment that we make must be informed by what we have picked up over the period. Is it the first quarter, second quarter, and whatever have shown us that this particular program is unable to continue in this way because it needs more money, and we are convinced that we need to take money from another source to put it into this area. And then you look also at the annual reports and any other information submitted to a House committee in terms of the standing rules or on request. So it means even information that would come from the public to that particular committee that is affected. I will make an example, Chairperson. Last year, we were faced with a submission through the public public hearings from, I still remember, Mr. Kayile from Melmoth. And that is one of the submissions that gives me sleepless nights. Because he says, government gave us land, and we are unable to service this land because we don't have resources, which is post whatever settlement support grant that needs to be in place. We need now to engage. Still, we have not done that as this committee, with the Committee on Land Reform as well as Agriculture, because now that they've got land, it might not be land reform, so it means it's now agricultural support. We still need to go and visit them to get to hear from them and see what it is that they need to do. So if there was any amendment that we needed to make, it is in that particular program where it's post-settlement support, where they need additional money. And I can give you an indication, Chairperson. Throughout this country, there is Mr. Kanyeles, who will give you an indication that we do have the land, but we can't work the land. I'm not an attractor to work on that particular land. We now have a policy that is going to be facing us, where we are going to be giving massive tracts of land to people who might need additional resources. So this literally sent me out of the meeting, because I could realize that even if the intention is good, this committee has got serious limitations. Remember, our time is also very limited. It might look like it's long when we are given that after the budget, the 2 months after the end of the financial year, the 31st of July. But once we start getting into the nuts and bolts of the work, then the 31st of July is on us. And we've got limited time and an opportunity. We are not going to be able to call all departments between this period as well as the 31st of July to be able to make any impact. So we need to look at the areas that literally we can say, if Nomabati, whatever, for this year, we're going to deal with this particular one. That is why Indoka Kanyile will always stay with me, because I still feel that we have failed him as this committee. We're getting into this budget year. We have not said to the Department of Agriculture, where is the money for this support program? There are people in KZN Shepperton who've been given land in their sugar plantations. We are now told that the feedstock for biofuels might be also sugar because of the sugar tax, which means that that is one area that we truly need to support for growth. But how do we do it? Because you need, President also told us, we need to know where to get that money if we are going to amend the budget. I rest my case.
Okay, Honorable Kaiso.
Yeah, at the start of the end of the presentation, you know, it was like I was asking myself, the process is so deep, and there is an indication that we are coming at the tail end. So, but then I got motivated by the last speaker, Honorable Dipuo. That perhaps say to us in the committee, we definitely have to. What is happening? There is a need maybe as a committee to, maybe after this process, because it's quite clear that there is a lot that is appealing to us to do a bit more better, look at the best approach to deal with these challenges of capacity to deal with the whole issues that are instructing us to follow as a committee, to interact with a range of reports and all that stuff before this process where it is now. So maybe it will, one would recommend that we have to discuss at the committee level a new approach that would assist us as a committee, such that we don't find ourselves, you know, although I know that we may still face the same situation, but at least we must have a best approach that would assist us to go navigate through this lengthy process, especially at the start of the budget cycle. Yeah, thank you, sir.
Yeah, remember, I'll allow the team to respond where it can respond. But let's also be aware that some of the things are contained in our Act, the Act which is passed by this Parliament. So if we need to amend certain things in the Act, it's us who must amend those things or propose the amendments to the to the Money Bills Act, which governs how we deal with this thing. I think let's underline that. And allow a National Treasurer to respond where they can respond, and where you say we see the problem, but it's in your court, members of Parliament, deal with this. All what you are doing, also helping us to interpret the law that we've passed. I think let's say there are things which are very much legislative, which falls within us, and I think we need to. I think it's one exercise that we need to go through ourselves and say this is making it very difficult for us to execute our responsibilities. So what do we recommend? Perhaps get involved in that process. Julia?
Okay. Thank you, Julia, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. So I think one of the things, and I want to go back to this about when do we bring Parliament back in here, and Honourable Peters rightly said that there's a separation of powers and we want to respect that. But then I was wondering, if I was a member of this committee who had the privilege of and the power that the legislation gives this committee, how would I use the Parliamentary Budget Office better along our budget cycle? And there are two important places around all of this. So the first is the tabling of the budget when the real hard work starts. But in moving backwards is the period between the tabling of the MTBPS, which is the policy intent around all of this, the Money Bills Act that requires portfolio committees to table budgetary review and recommendations reports and what comes out of all of that into the budget process. So there's some work that I think that the Parliamentary Budget Office and the role that the Parliamentary Budget Office plays between the NTBPS and the tabling of the budget that is critical for supporting the work that this committee does post the tabling of the budget. And that might help in separating the powers between the executive and the legislature around all of this, but also empowering the legislature around using the powers effectively that is set in the Moneyball Act. Then I want to go back to some of the questions in the first round that we might not have gotten around to. So, Chair, your question on what are payments for financial assets. So the definition in the economic reporting format around all of this defines it in two ways. It's either when government lends money to a public corporation or when government capitalizes an institution. So when we refer to bailouts, and there's two different ways that we can do this. So usually when we are putting an equity injection into an institution, it would fall under the payments for financial assets. And I can think of two in my portfolio where you can see the differences. A few years ago in the appropriation bill, we recapitalized the National Housing Finance Corporation. That showed up in the appropriation bill as payments for financial assets. But what you would see in the budget, and what was in last year's appropriation bill, is we also transfer money to the National Housing Finance Corporation for the administration of the finance-linked housing subsidy program. That money would sit under transfers and subsidies because that's an operational transfer that is made to the institution. It appears quite differently on that entity's balance sheet or financial statements on whether it goes directly onto the balance sheet or whether it goes onto the income statement. And where they are public corporations or business enterprises, it has significant tax implications for them in how that is done. So when we talk about a bailout, so theoretically a bailout would be a recapitalization, so it would show up in financial assets. But when that is just a kind of working capital injection, it will show differently on all of that. On the comparing the roles of SCOF and SCOA, the Moneyball Act makes it quite clear. It's quite distinct. This committee deals with Moneyball. SCOF deals with finance balls. That's a clear distinction around how we, or at least how we see it. when do we go out to borrow?
No. Okay, talk about the finance bills and the money bills.
Okay. And so on. Okay, so the money bills are the two bills that we have referred to that we've brought here. The finance bill would be all the tax legislation, so the tax amendments, the TLAB, the tax administration bills, all of that goes to the finance committee and the fiscal framework. The finance committee deals with the legislation that raises the money. This committee deals with the legislation that spends the money.
But obviously, the finance committee will also be responsible for your institutions, your land banks and so on. That's where they account and so on, the oversight responsibility, SARS and stuff and so on.
So the finance committee is also like the portfolio committee. They are they have oversight over the Ministry of Finance.
Okay. So would I be correct to say that the Standing Committee of Finance should be reporting to this committee as well? For the purposes of oversight, because we have a responsibility in terms of the money that's appropriated already.
Mm-hmm. Or you can put it back and say this committee can also interact as we do with the Standing Committee on Finance, and you can always have to have meetings with them like we have done before. There's no doubt there are areas of overlap, no matter how much we try to have the walls of Jericho between and amongst ourselves, still there will be some overlaps.
And then the last question that I'll deal with is on when do we go out and borrow money? And I think one of the things that is the Treasury's responsibility is to ensure that there's sufficient money in the system so that responsible authorities, spending authorities, are able to execute on their delivery mandate. And what we do in the beginning of the financial year, so this is quite regulated, so we ask departments to tell us when do they need that money in the year. So you will notice when we report to you in our quarterly reports, we will always say that their spending is higher or lower than projected because that is really the money that is lying in the system as the opportunity costs that you were referring to. So we ask departments to tell us how they need that money, and we need to make sure that there's sufficient money in the system. So before the appropriation bill is promulgated, there's some limitations around all of that in the PFMA. But that would then allow us to then do some forecasts on how we get tax revenue in, whether we have enough money in the system, and then how much do we need to borrow, and there's different instruments that the Treasury has to do all of that. And the big worry around all of this would be when a department, and we did this a few years ago, is the Department of Transport came to us and said that they need to make a payment for the procurement in the new rolling stock program that required 4 billion rand to be transferred in the first month of the financial year, when we didn't have that kind of money. And then they didn't transfer the money in the first month of the financial year. It meant that we had to borrow the money, and it was lying idle in the system. That's a tricky bit, which is why when we come here on the reporting side, we focus on that spending against the projection, because that's really the trade-off in having money in the system that isn't being used. Sometimes we'd have to go borrow that money, sometimes we don't have to. And that's the real underspending that then we come and show you when we come on a quarterly basis. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. You're not telling me what I want to hear. You're concentrating on the issue of the money, that's fine. But what about the emphasis on the fact that you must have the ability to be able to pay that? Because right now we're running into a fiscal cliff, if you really look at it, going away to 70%. So are you also taking that into consideration before you decide to borrow, the ability to be able to repay? Because remember, not long ago we were, sitting at 27 or 30%. We're now going to 70%.
I mean, that's a broader fiscal framework conversation that we have around what we project around our debt service costs and what kind of prudent fiscal management around all of that. The borrowing that we kind of do in the short term is to ensure that there's sufficient liquidity in the system so that everybody can deliver on their mandates as they tell us they're going to do. And when we then revise these numbers, so we always see in the fiscal framework that if something has changed and we've had to borrow more than what we needed to, those estimates do change within the system. I think there's a bigger issue around, I don't know how to say this now.
Colleague would like to come in then,
okay.
Please.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I should also add on to what Ulrika is saying, particularly regarding our debt sustainability. Perhaps we should go back and say why our debt has escalated to levels it is today. In 2008-09, when we were faced with a crisis in South Africa, we take a decision to say that we'll implement a counter-cyclical fiscal policy. Because at that time, economic growth was subdued, was timid. So we said, how do we boost this falling economic growth? We said we'll implement infrastructure. To fund that infrastructure, it means we'll have to go into the market and borrow. That was a principle then. But 2012, that principle changed because we started to spend for even current spending and not for infrastructure. Hence, our debt to GDP is rising to the extent that you are seeing today. But then you also need to consider the fact that when our credit ratings were falling down, there was a repricing in our debt. It means the cost of paying the existing debt is even much higher than the original period when we were borrowing. Hence, we see our debt to GDP is at levels that it is currently today. But also, to make sure that our debt comes back, you know, we look at the issue of timing. When do we borrow? When the market is conducive, the fiscal framework will determine how much to borrow, the deficit. But in terms of when, we look at when the market is conducive for us to enter. But also, our largest percentage of our debt is denominated in rand and not in foreign, in hard currency, that is your US dollars, your euros, to make sure that our debt portfolio is sustainable. But the focus in government at the moment is to make sure that we borrow less and we make use of what we have in our coffers. And we also have other avenues that we can borrow into. For instance, in the Reserve Bank, we have what you call the Corporation for Public Deposit that we can borrow at very marginal rates as compared to when you enter the debt capital market. Thank you.
Okay, there are questions which have not been answered, Honourable Member. Why don't we allow them to, and then you'll come in. Let's deal with the...
It is
an interesting discussion, by the way. Many other things that I think members would like to say about that, but let's just try to finish the questions, and then it is an interactive type of engagement. We'll come back to them. Please...
Chair, you asked me about the 43 million in interest and land that is part of the PPP unitary fee that DBE pays for their building in the appropriation bill. You saw that line there. The other organization that is also meant to help this committee and is the Financial and Fiscal Commission. So alongside the Parliamentary Budget Office, Chair, I would suggest that between the MCBPS and the time we come for the budget that you also engage them. And then the final thing to say is because the process for the budget is an iterative one that goes between the technicians and the executive, the politicians in the executive. So contrary to what people like to say that the National Treasury allocates, we allocate nothing, Chair. And you will hear us say that repeatedly. All of the appropriation bill, all of the division of revenue bill is discussed at the Minister's Committee on the Budget and discussed at the Budget Council and the Budget Forum, in which there are politicians who say, no, we don't like this, we like that. We would take that there and put this here. No, reduce that one and add that there. Or mainly they actually say add, but okay, I'm just making, but nobody says minus because that would be, that's just not your instinct. So it's not, we the technicians and we are not always privy to how the politicians in the executive make up their own minds about how things should be done. So the committee also needs to keep that in mind, Chair. So you sometimes are asking an explanation from us about X. We are the, what do they say, the messenger. Now the you shoot the messenger. So, no, I'm preparing ourselves for later when we come. So there's a constant interaction on that level. In the same way that there are the portfolio committees, there are ministers for each of the 41 votes, and they are also interested that they get the resources that will allow them to deliver on the strategic plan that they've signed off on. And we face trade-offs, and sometimes you have to make hard choices. And so you hear our minister tomorrow talk about the hard choices that cabinet has to make. I think we run a fair, open and transparent process in as far as we can. It is very difficult to have public participation at our level because who do you choose? We try to be transparent. That is why we have the Vuleka Mali online portal. People can look at, ask all kinds of questions, and they should be able to extract data out of that. We also, in the Wendy and Stephen, just correct me, in the Budget Council have the chair of finance, appropriations of both houses. So in some ways you are there at earlier decision-making points to hear what is being suggested. So it's not like there is a bit of more interaction, but maybe not at the level of detail that the committee necessarily needs, because those are more the intergovernmental parts of the process, not necessarily focusing on the national piece, which is what this committee has more say around.
Okay, Honourable Peters, you wanted to say something? Who else wanted to come in? Honourable Sheikh, after Peters.
Thank you, Chairperson. My last input. There is an indication. I'm looking for that slide where you had the special schools, or some learners with profound intellectual disabilities grant. This is a conditional grant. It's given to provinces. It's very important for us to follow some of that grant, colleagues, because you have a situation in the country where, as we speak, we've got quite a number of children with learning disabilities who are roaming the streets. And there are some schools that have got remedial educators. There are some schools that have been built as special schools for children with learning disabilities, but the rate at which the Minister of Higher Education usually says the missing middle, but these ones are not necessarily the missing middle, are the missing children. We pick up children in our communities who have never gone to school with learning disabilities. They don't belong in the mainstream, and yet there is no school that can accommodate them. And also the situation of provinces has created even a bigger problem. Like, for example, if you take the demarcation between Mpumalanga and Limpopo, the bulk of the special schools that were built in the previous periods are in the area that is now called Limpopo, and Mpumalanga doesn't have. So that's why I'm interested to know how this particular grant is used. But also there's a statement that you made earlier on slide 36 about all the schools got all the books. But we know that there would be schools that don't have all the books for various reasons. The schools were overcrowded, or the learners were registered late. That is a national problem. As we speak, there are children who are also not in school because they have not been accommodated in some of the schools. But some of them is because of the parents, and because the parents would prefer a particular school as opposed to another one. You would have seen yesterday in the Sowetan where the parents were saying they are not going to send their children to a particular township school because of the quality of teaching in or education in that particular school. So it's some of those things that has a bearing. But also there is challenges of learner support material or workbooks that were found dumped. So sometimes you could say the schools have got these materials once they've been dumped as opposed to being delivered to the different schools. Chairperson, there is the issue now that you raised the borrowing, and Honorable Kaiso also spoke about the issues of I think it's Honorable Zembo, about Zore. Can you tell us, as National Treasury, the COSATU recommendation that, and also the view of National Treasury about accessing the pension funds to support some of the programs of government, would the borrowing, no, I'm raising this, would the borrowing from pension funds this be the first
whatever borrowing that was done, or is it because this one is public and it happens at the time where people have got access to information? Chairperson, I'm raising this because you'd remember Madiba said to us in 1994, the rationale for paying the apartheid debt was because the debt was to the workers of South Africa. And I still remember that particular statement because it sent us a little bit back. I was very young, militant at that particular time. He said, no payment to apartheid debt. But he put us in our place by saying, do you say to the workers of this country, thank you, goodbye, whatever you have put in, we are now saying you should not get back. So I'm asking this question out of interest on whether this is the first ever that South Africa would be borrowing from pension funds.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. First of all, I didn't get a response on those guidelines for the state-owned entities and things like Eskom and things like that. I don't know if you can tell us what's the situation, because this committee needs that to be able to follow to ensure that the money you've appropriated or loaned them or bailed them out, whether it is it's effective. So we need to have a look at those guidelines and tell us why we haven't got them, or if you can give them to us. I think that will help us a lot. Now, initially, the guideline, you know what I'm talking about? You know, okay, yeah. Okay, are we there? Suresh, yeah, okay, yeah, the guideline. The other thing is, you know, where I was coming from earlier on was, you know, in terms of these plans, the strategic plans that we were saying we were getting from all the relevant departments. Now, I want you to guide us. For us to be able to follow that money right to the ground to ensure that it is being used for the correct purposes and that it's in line with their strategic plan and whether they have consulted with the public in terms of drawing it out. Now, we never get those things. In other words, we never see what's happening in a municipal level, nothing. It's just gone from there to provinces, and then we're just getting the big figures that are coming. What do you recommend that we can do so that this committee can play a greater role in ensuring that those provincial and local as well, that business plans speak to the needs of that community, the money that's appropriated is spent, that they take into consideration the needs of that community to the extent that, and I know people are not saying I want houses and I want it today, whether it's 3 years or 5 years down the line, you tell them 5 years and you give it to them. That is what they want. So we want to play that role so that we can ensure that whatever they come in, they're just not, you know, spoon-fed, just coming and writing it down, you know, increasing it by 5% or 10% every year. And lastly, Chair, I'm going to go to this now. You know, we have a population increase of this country, which is now going to close to 1 million a year. Okay? Many of our ministers, most of them are dependent on national government for their resources. Do you honestly believe that this is sustainable, given the fact that you have a 1 million rand population increase, the needs and the performance of already of the particularly a whole lot of the 257 municipalities minus the 18 and things, do you think Treasury is going to be able to sustain this on the long term? If not, who and what are you recommending that we do differently to be able to address this?
Okay. No, Peter, I was looking at Wendy as you were talking about this, and I could hear her saying, this is very political, you must tell me it's very political. That's fine, but the affairs, simple thing, has this been done before? Yes or no? I think you need to address that. So that we close, we'll give you about 10 minutes to close. But before you do that, I think the simple thing when it comes to budget, whether it's the household budget or the government budget or the company budget, the starting point is that there will always be limited resources. What do they say? Many wants, limited resources. I think that's what you always know. So that's, then you need to make choices. Choices as to where you are going to put your resources and when you are going to put those resources and so on and so forth. And obviously,
where I'm coming to. This one of the problems that I always see us doing, basically, when we talk about the debt to GDP ratio, we only focus on one element of the debt to GDP ratio. Most is it about debt. Whereas there are two ways you can decrease the debt to GDP ratio. Right? One is to decrease the debt itself, the numerator, and increase the denominator, which is GDP. And I think there's been so much focus on the debt part, and not the increasing of the GDP. And I think that's what we need to really spend our time on, and the whole thing, the multiplier effect. What happens when you deal with it, you only concentrate on debt, or what happens when you increase it? Hence, I'm just saying that it's one type of a conversation I think we really need to have, even as a committee, to say what can we do looking at the budget, the high impact areas, for instance, where we think that we can get more GDP impact and so on, so that we are able to, because the decreasing of debt has got limits. There's no doubt about that. That you can only apply austerity measures up to a point. Behind it, you can't be able to move. And what happens again if you look at when you do that, the impact on the GDP and all the things that you wanted to solve, and your revenue and so on and so forth. I'm just saying that I would like to hear the learned people, not necessarily now, the learned people from Treasury. I haven't heard that really. I know that the minister, the paper that the minister came up with, but when I look at the resources that you are allocating, they are not talking to that. For instance, we have said tourism is one area that we are looking at, but are the resources saying that we're allocating or the minister will be allocating tomorrow? We've spoken about agriculture, the Mr. Kanyile that Honorable Tipu is talking about. If we agree on that, then does our allocation of the resources talk to our desired outcome? I think it's one area that I really would like us to talk to. Even if it's not now, and I would like you to apply your minds on those things. But why don't we give you an opportunity to respond to the issues that have been raised? Madame at the corner.
I would like to respond to the conditions that we set for state-owned entities. So I'm speaking with regard to the conditions we set for the SABC. I think we set conditions, we made a preliminary allocation, and then they had to meet further conditions. I think we can assist the committee by reporting on it on a quarterly basis, and also the committee can call in the department in the case of SABC if the communications department. We work with our assets and liability divisions, also the national department, to set the conditions for the state-owned entity. So we can assist the department by including it in our report, and the department can also call the department to report on it.
Come, Julia. Let's see whether we don't get they won't add on to that. Let's go.
Now, in terms of the special appropriation, it's the same thing we tell you when we come here. We may work for the National Treasury, but we are not the National Treasury Department. Do you understand? We have oversight over the 41 national votes, including the National Treasury. And so that is why we don't explain the deviations or the IFMS or because that's for the Treasury as a department. So in that instance, I mean, for that appropriation, the minister and whoever else that is involved with that thing would have needed to have made the conditions. But just to say, I think if the committee thinks about the budget like this, that there are items in the budget that the budget is already taken up by the standard items, and actually the room to maneuver in the budget is a lot smaller. It's not the
the full, you don't start from naught again. I.e., I exist in the National Treasury, and if I don't resign or they don't fire me, you have to pay my salary. So if we take that as the starting point, then of every 100 rand, well, first the debt service cost, that's already whatever it is, 11. That's, now we're left with 89, I can't even minus small numbers. Then the wage bill is another 35%. Unless people leave, so the space for changes is really on the margin. That is why I think the requirements for the committee to change things looks very onerous is because there are serious consequences for reductions of things. And one is would hope that when by the time the Treasury people come and present what Cabinet has approved, that we've had time to consider all the impacts and what it might mean. So it's not a willy-nilly we woke up yesterday, Chair, and that's how the budget arrived. As you know, we've been working since July on this appropriation bill, or the division of revenue bill that will come, or the fiscal framework that will come. So it's, and yes, we may have more technical people than the committee has at its disposal, but I do think that the Parliamentary Budget Office must really concentrate on helping this committee as well as the FSC, because they are, let's put it on par with us in terms of the kinds of technical skills that they have. We also have all the information. None of our information is not available. Huge, big spreadsheets down to fine minutiae of items. So it's about how do you harness what is available to aid the committee. And then just to say, Chair, you also know that the way that this set of people that are here today are arranged, I speak for education, so I'm also fighting my corner. My colleague over there that does urban infrastructure, she's fighting her corner. We are not disinterested parties. So none of us will also want to give up any. So in the same way that Stephen and Wendy will fight for provinces and local governments versus the rest of us fighting for national. So it's contested terrain all over. And we have frank and hard discussions. But you've got to bring your evidence. So I mean that's the point I'm making. You can't say just because. Then they will say, but where's your evidence? Then you have to show your evidence. Otherwise, you need to step away if somebody's got better evidence than you. I mean, the other thing, social grants, that's, what is that, almost 190 billion rand. I don't think anybody will just say we will reduce that. You see where we are, Chair, now we're left with 20 of the 100 that can be maneuvered around. So it is understanding those things that maybe would be helpful. I think maybe we come with too many if we're giving you too much information in one small space of time. And so I don't know if you want to see us more than you already do, Jay.
No. Thank you. We will definitely ask all types of questions at you. Those that you can't answer, it's okay. But I'm sure you can elevate them to the DG, who we think that is disinterested more than you guys are, because he's responsible for all of you. That's one. But I just thought let me answer Honourable Peters.
PIC has funded AXA, I remember. They funded AXA, they funded TPSA, they funded Land Bank. So there's nothing new about that. So I think the question is that it's only now that people are well versed there. And when they got engaged in those institutions, especially TPSA, TPSA was having financial problems, but now they declare dividends, right? Having been been part of PIC, one rationale that PIC didn't come from it, it came from PIC itself. PIC was saying, if the economy of this country is not working, PIC's investments are going down. It's simple as that. They are the most exposed investor, even on the JSE. For instance, I think it's yesterday or the other day, the JSE took a knock of about 4.5%. The biggest, on the JSE, the biggest loser there is PIC. There's more than any other investor on the JSE as we're talking. So I'm just saying that I think it's because ESCOM has been on the news and so on and so forth. There's been more information, people are more informed, and we've gone out and tried to politicize this thing more than it's supposed to be and so on. Because people are going to invest there. That they are going to come up with very, very stringent conditions. By the way, we're not even saying that it's a law. They want to take equity at ESCOM, so that they own ESCOM. They become the owners of ESCOM too. The workers also own ESCOM. So that's just the high level part of it. So to answer you directly, it's not going to be the first time. But obviously, it's always good to have these things being debated so that this information can be shared. Eh? So I think let's leave it at that and thank Team National Treasury. I know, again, even at Treasury boardroom, there's always a fight about the budget. Honorable Peters, you know that even in Cabinet, when Cabinet sit down and say, Cabinet will agree that, no, we need to decrease there and so on, but when they say now, Department so-and-so are taking so much, no. Honorable Peters said, no, take from everybody else, I think I need to deal with roads. Okay, so but it's a healthy tension and so on, because out of those discussions, I think an optimal solution comes out. But thank you very much. Good luck with your budget tomorrow. Thank you. But honourable members, please don't run away. I just need about 2 minutes of your time. We've just sent to the letter from the Minister of Finance and on the conditions that ESCOM conditions, remember that we spoke about conditions, and I saw the letter is dated sometime November, but I received it this morning on my desk. It was posted. I don't know why Minister Treasury decided to post the letter when they've got an office here, and then my office is on the other side of the passage. But that's fine. We'll talk about that. I just wanted to say, please look into that, and let's see whether it does address what we spoke about. Thank you very much, honourable members. The meeting is adjourned.